Rediscovered Radio, women's voices, women's music from the WYSO archives is brought to you in part by the Levitt Pavilion in downtown Dayton. Building community through music, one free concert at a time.
Hey, Juliet, listen to this. I want to play you something from the archives.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
It's a tape from a radio show that aired on WYSO over 50 years ago.
We are a class. We are oppressed as a class. And we each respond within the limits allowed us as members of that oppressed class. The first step, then, is to accept our plight as a common plight, to see other women as reflections of ourselves, without obscuring, of course, the very real differences in intelligence, temperament, age, education, and background. Purposely divided from each other, each of us is ruled by one or more men for the benefit of all men. There is no personal escape, no personal salvation, no personal solution.
When I was a single girl dressed in clothes of fun.
You know what, Jocelyn? I think this could be the perfect jumping off point for our podcast.
Yeah, I like it.
Wish I was a single girl again.
Well, here it goes. Welcome to our first Rediscovered Radio podcast, Women's Voices, Women's Music in the WYSO Archives. I'm Jocelyn Robinson, WYSO's Director of Radio Preservation and Archives.
And I'm Juliet Frumholt, the station's Music Director.
We're going to take you deep into the WYSO Archives to explore the past 65 years through a very specific critical framework. We'll examine race, class, and gender
through the views and voices of women. Women who hosted shows, performed music on the air and live in the Dayton area, of women who made audio documentaries and who ran WYSO during a time when men dominated media and few women were managing public radio stations. You're going to hear a lot of music, music from the 1960s and 70s through today, but you're also going to hear about politics, about the struggle for women's liberation, about the labor movement. Because you can't not talk about politics when you talk about music at WYSO.
And you'll hear about the careers in media that WYSO launched, especially those of women who went on to make big impacts in public radio and documentary. Over each episode, we'll explore some aspect of WYSO's history and the history of our Miami Valley community as heard through archival tape and the voices of women who were there.
In some cases, over a half century ago, back when WYSO began making the transition from a tiny student-run college radio station to the Miami Valley's primary public media source for information and music that it is today. We'll examine how WYSO didn't just chronicle the changes taking place, but was itself a change agent, from covering the civil rights movement to becoming a megaphone for women's rights. And we'll look at how WYSO continues the traditions of its founding, even today. Let's start by looking back to how the station got started.
WYSO has begun broadcasting on this first evening at 7:30 p.m. to bring you the dedication and formal opening of this station. Our regular schedule will be each evening of the week from 8 p.m. to 12:05 a.m. and on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. Until our regular sign-on at 7:56 this evening, we bring you now Tchaikovsky's Serenade for Strings, Charles Munch conducting the strings of the Boston Symphony.
In 1958, three clever engineering students strung wire through the campus steam tunnels. They were Hal Roth, Ed Richards, and Terry Herndon, and they wanted to use the 19-watt signal to create what they considered a community station. Here's how they expressed it in the very first program guide.
We cannot expect to sit up here in our ivory tower and put programs on the air without considering the needs and desires of our audience. We hope you will enjoy this, our first schedule. What it will be in the months to come is up to you. Let us know how we can make this a community radio station.
But community was kind of limited when the broadcast signal only reached a few dorms on campus, and keeping the DIY radio station operating 4 hours a day was more or less a student project. Most non-commercial educational radio back then was pretty conventional. It certainly wasn't student-run, and remember, there was no NPR at the time. But WYSO's founders were clear that community was central to the project, and the broadcasts reflected the students who cobbled the station together. That first week, there was mostly classical music, a smidge of jazz, 15-minute newscasts, some faculty commentaries, and very formal-sounding, very Eurocentric, and very male announcers, as heard in the station's inaugural broadcast.
Good evening. At this time, Antioch College begins its first official transmission on FM. This is station WYSO, owned and operated by Antioch College, Yellow Springs, Ohio, with studios and transmitter on the campus of Antioch College, operating on a frequency of 91.5 megacycles by authority of the Federal Communications Commission. For its first program, the Antioch Broadcasting System will bring you the official opening and formal dedication of its facilities in the Antioch Union.
But also in that first program guide, we find that one of the earliest voices belonged to Charlotte Drake, who hosted a half-hour radio program called Around the Town, which promised, quote, news, comments, and information about Yellow Springs. Drake was an alumna of the college, Yellow Springs born and bred. She came to work for six Antioch presidents beginning in 1957, the year before the station went on the air, mostly as the coordinator of public occasions, serving as chief protocol officer, the social hostess with the mostess at college functions. Later, she managed alumni relations until her retirement in 1986. Then, with perfectly coiffed white hair and pearls, Charlotte Drake was graciousness personified. She knew everyone and everything going on in the village. One can only imagine her radio show as a recap of faculty doings, gardening tips, and politely dispensed local gossip. Hers was one of the first, if not the first, female voices heard on WYSO.
You know, Jocelyn, it's easy to assume from where you and I sit today that there were a lot of women on YSO in roles like ours, but that definitely was not the case when the station was first founded.
No, it certainly wasn't. And I think one of the things that really strikes me is the sound of the male voices that were on the air. They remind me of the newscasters of the day, like Edward R. Murrow or Lowell Thomas. You know, even Rod Serling had that sort of affected speech. Well before the Twilight Zone, in the late 40s, he was student manager of the precursor to WYSO, the Antioch Broadcasting System, where he first wrote and produced radio dramas. That speech pattern sounds really old-fashioned in our ears today. And for sure, there weren't many women's voices on the air at that time.
No, there weren't. And we'll see in the future that they definitely become more prominent. But when we're looking at somebody like Charlotte Drake, you know, she was in a very specific role, really staying in the realm of what was considered women's spaces, both in society and on the airwaves.
Yeah, it was definitely women's work.
Over the first decade, those handy engineering students increased the station's signal strength so WYSO could be picked up beyond Yellow Springs in a few neighboring communities, Springfield, Fairborn, and parts of Dayton. Around this time, students sometimes made recordings of broadcasts and other events. Most radio stations did not routinely make tapes of their broadcasts, so we're really lucky somebody thought to record those moments. Those recordings chronicle the 1960s at Antioch, and they're reflective of what was going on in Yellow Springs, as well as the wider world.
The case may ultimately have to be decided by the Ohio Supreme Court.
Students at WYSO reported on local civil rights struggles, including the protests against discrimination at Lou Gegner's Yellow Springs barbershop in 1963, when he refused to cut black men's hair.
You've been listening to a special report on the Yellow Springs barbershop controversy. This program was written and directed by Bruce Havens. Program Production Director, Ezra Levine. Staff Reporters, David Gregory and Dan Wershow. Technical Assistant for Field Recording, Art Meisler. Special thanks to Larry Rubin for equipment used in pre-recording sections of this program in the field. This has been a special presentation of WYSO Radio News. Bruce Havens speaking. Good night.
They recorded the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s commencement address at Antioch College, his wife Coretta Scott's alma mater, in 1964.
The great challenge facing us is to be participants, involved participants, in the struggle to make brotherhood and justice realities in our day and in our age. There are still too many detached spectators. There are still too many silent onlookers. But in the words of the first president of this college, and a great mind, be ashamed to die until you have gained some victory for humanity. And this means becoming involved in all of the struggles of mankind to make this nation, to make this world better.
And they broadcast a conference on Vietnam and the history of conflict in Southeast Asia that featured Daniel Ellsberg, then a military analyst, years before the Pentagon Papers and his association with the anti-war movement.
Thank you. I apologize for being late. Well, he just came from the airport and I insisted on stopping for a sandwich on the way. I understand that my function here today is to be fed to the lions. And I didn't want to face that on an empty stomach. Wouldn't be fair to you. I was being told about the conference, and I'm very impressed by it. The understanding I got was that you seem to have a very balanced attempt to get at the and an understanding of the Vietnamese situation and our policy there, which impressed me. It seemed like a lot of work had gone into this conference, and in my experience, people who are willing to devote that much energy are people who are pretty much committed on one side or another. So I compliment the people who arranged this on apparently having made quite an effort to get a good, thorough coverage of it.
They recorded writers and leading thinkers of the day who stopped at Antioch on the college lecture tour circuit, like poet Archibald MacLeish and legal scholar Peter Irons, and the iconic essayist Susan Sontag, who came to campus in the spring of 1965.
I want to say two things before I begin. The first is that I have been to about 10 universities and colleges, most cases giving single lectures, some cases participating in sort of group discussions with other invited people. And this is the first time I've ever really enjoyed myself. since I came yesterday, I've been engaged in a continual dialogue with about 10 or 15 students. This never happens anywhere else. I'm talking about places like Princeton and Yale and Brown and a lot of other places. You just get carried off by faculty and entertained very pleasantly, but not very stimulatingly. And I haven't met any faculty yet, but I've met, but I've met a lot of marvelous people. And really, the only pleasure for me thus far in going and lecturing is making some money, which I'm not making here, and in hearing myself talk. This time, it's something entirely different. It's being able to talk, to engage in a dialogue.
By the late 60s, change was blowing in the wind, and WYSO sound was reflecting that change. Students were playing the music of the day, folk and jazz and pop and a bit of R&B. There was little in the way of local news or public affairs programming around this time, but the frequency, then 91.5, was alive with all sorts of music shows.
And women students had more airtime. Like Julia Reichert with her 1969 show, The Single Girl, probably the first feminist radio show in the country, according to feminist scholar Judith Ezekiel. Most media of the time treated the women's movement with derision, making jokes about hairy-legged libbers and bra burning. Dayton area newspapers in particular didn't take feminist content seriously, calling it faddish and relegating it to the women's pages between Dear Abby and Hints from Heloise, according to Ezekiel. WYSO was one place where women's lib was no laughing matter.
That's all tonight for The Single Girl. I hope you've enjoyed the excerpts we read from Beverly Jones's article Toward a Female Liberation Movement, and I hope you'll listen again next week. This is Julia Reichert. Good night.
Go barefoot all the time. Wish I was a single girl again. Wish I was a single girl.
Julia Reichert passed away in December of 2022, but throughout her career, she credited WYSO with setting her on the path to becoming a documentary filmmaker. With fellow student Jim Klein, her first husband and producing partner, she made films like Union Maids and Seeing Red, and taught filmmaking at Wright State in Dayton for many years.
Later, with her beloved life and creative partner Steve Bognar, she made A Lion in the House, The Last Truck, and the Academy Award-winning documentary American Factory. But it was Jim Klein, in fact, who first trained Julia and dozens of others to make radio at WYSO.
And Julia signed up to do a program.
I talked with Nina Ellis, herself an award-winning journalist and former WYSO general manager, about Julia Reichert's early influences.
And she had been very actively participating in what she refers to as consciousness-raising groups, where a group of women would get together outside of class and talk about the patriarchy and, you know, how society was creating norms for women's behavior that they didn't agree with, right? So they were discovering what Julia joyfully called women's liberation. She emphasized that. We called it women's liberation. She says, think about that. Think about those words. And that was life-changing, I think I would say. It was life-changing for her. It set her on a path.
Nina interviewed Julia several times over the years. Here they are in conversation about WYSO's impact on Julia's career.
WYSO is where I learned my craft. WYSO is where I learned how to edit, how to record, how to write narration, how to speak on the air, how to make a story happen, beginning, middle, and end, how to work to a deadline. If it hadn't been for WYSO, I wouldn't be a filmmaker. I'm completely sure about that. So WYSO also started me on that path of realizing that media can make a difference. You know, media can make a difference, that people hearing things, seeing things, can affect the way they think and see the world. I mean, I saw that with what we did in the spring of 1970 with how we helped people understand the student point of view, let's say, on why we were opposed to the war. So WYSO helped me see that there was power in this medium. I mean, don't forget, I was a photographer first. So you could put a picture up on the wall and people could look at it and go, oh, great picture. But how many people are going to see that picture? But if we went on the air, we would get phone calls. We would get letters. People heard it. People responded. Well, that's very powerful. And I didn't leave college thinking, okay, my career is going to be, you know, in media, or I'm going to be a journalist, or I'm going to be... It was just like I had that skill. I was bitten by the bug. And I just kept doing stuff. But it 100% started at Antioch College, and most of it at WYSO. Learning all those skills, being around people who really cared about this stuff, you know, who we talked about it, we taught each other, we made each other better, we argued about what we did. And that shapes how you think about the world. That also helps you know what's going on in the world in a way that a typical student not involved in that sort of thing would have no idea. You know, I sort of forgot about that. Wow, that was real stuff. It was real. That's the thing. It wasn't like we were in some little cocoon college just studying our books and writing papers. It was like real life. And it's been that way for me ever since. It's kind of what I started with. If people understood each other, there would be peace in the world. Well, in a way, I still believe that. That little pieces of that are actually possible through radio, through film, now through television too, right? So, anyway, that's not a very good summary.
That's awesome, Julia. That's an awesome summary.
Julia Reichert wasn't the only one WYSO set on a media-making path. 1969 was also the year a young faculty wife with time on her hands signed up to volunteer at the college's radio station.
Well, I grew up with radio. I was born and raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and my dad loved listening to radio. He was not a broadcaster or a producer, but radio was always on in our house and in the car.
That's Joanne Wallace, a veteran public radio station manager. Her name may not be familiar to you, but if you work in public media, you've definitely heard of her.
at one point, he began working for a small electronics firm and once brought home one of the early, early commercial tape recorders. And my sister and I, we made radio shows. And, you know, we were listeners to, you know, the afternoon, weekday, sort of kids' shows.
Sky King!
You know, Sky King and the Alaskan Huskies and Roy Rogers and Hopalong Cassidy. So radio was really in my blood and in my heart. So I was born in 1940 and television didn't really come along until the early 50s. And so there was no competition, really, with radio, except for newspapers and print and gossip and people on the telephone talking to each other.
Radio came back into Joanne's life in the early 60s when she was a college student in the San Francisco Bay Area.
And I found KPFA, the flagship Pacifica station in Berkeley. And I was in Palo Alto at the time, but listening to KPFA all the time and admiring not only their music programs, but also their, you know, their news and public affairs programs. They had the first U.S. reporter in North Vietnam, and drama and literature and music of all kinds.
Her husband got a job at Antioch, and they moved to Yellow Springs in the fall of 1968.
The radio station was here, student-run, playing all kinds of music. Not any news and public affairs that I can remember, although there were probably recordings of events, music events, and, you know, famous poets and writers who came through. I think actually Julie Reichert and Jim Klein had taught a friend of mine, Carol Atkins, and me a little bit of radio production. But I volunteered and suggested to the student station manager at the time that I would like to produce an afternoon news program.
And that's when Joanne Wallace, Carol Atkins, and members of a campus Marxist study group, the Radical Studies Institute, started the People's News. They saw WYSO's potential power in reaching the people with a half-hour daily newscast, mostly gleaned from the Liberation News Service and the AP Wire. The People's News amplified a progressive viewpoint that heretofore hadn't been widely heard on Miami Valley airwaves.
This is the Prison Report, a weekly feature of WYSO People's News. The Prison Report examines recent developments concerning correctional institutions, inmates, and criminal justice. Radical attorney William Kunstler made an appearance Friday in the Riverside, California case of Gary Lawton and Zerebu Gardner. Lawton and Gardner are two black activists in the Riverside area who were being charged with the 1972 slave.
The People's News fired up a lot of interest among students. According to one source, 60 or 70 students signed up every quarter to learn news and audio production. There was no lack of material for critical analysis by the People's News crew, but even though they may have been mostly Marxists, they certainly weren't without a sense of humor. Here's a report from news director Mark Miracle.
And finally, from the Nothing is Sacred department, church officials in Italy are up in arms over a brand of casual pants called Jesus jeans. In billboards plastered liberally throughout Italy, a female model is shown wearing the tight-fitting jeans from her waist to her thigh. The zipper on the jeans is open a bit, and the slogan below reads, quote, "Thou shalt have no other jeans but me." In another billboard ad, the model is shown from behind, again wearing the skin-tight Jesus jeans. In the middle of the waistband is printed the brand name Jesus, and just below, written across her backside, are the words, quote, "He who loves me follows me." In some cities, the posters have been torn down by protesting Christians. In Milan, church supporters have been pasting their own posters across the offending billboards, signs which read, quote, "This publicity offends every good Christian." Well, Jesus jeans may be controversial, but they're selling. The owner of the company says that sales are up 400%. This is radio station WYSO 91.5 FM in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and this has been The People's News.
About that time, WYSO had the opportunity to increase its wattage through a Corporation for Public Broadcasting grant, But to get that grant, the station had to professionalize.
And in 1973, the college asked me to be this station manager, the first, I like to say, the first adult, although they would say the first professional station manager that WISO had. And that enabled WISO then to qualify for a Corporation for Public Broadcasting public radio grant, which helped really start the station in new directions. And the requirement was that we be on the air 18 hours a day and that we have five paid full-time staff. So that was 73. And I left finally to go to Berkeley, California, to manage KPFA in 1977. So there was a four-year period when I was station manager.
Those 4 years were formative for WYSO, beyond formative. They were the foundation for what WYSO would become today. Student programmers were joined by more community members, and many women were among the scores of volunteers earning FCC third-class operator licenses. News and public affairs increased, radio documentaries were produced examining labor and gender and race and police brutality, striking nurses, prison reform, birth control, and other topics of the day. WYSO became an NPR affiliate in 1973 and began carrying the two-year-old flagship news magazine, All Things Considered.
WYSO was exploding with talent. Program guides from those years that are in the WYSO archives list names like Randy Tom, who is now director of Skywalker Sound and has 15 Oscar noms to date with two wins. Andrew Garrison, who, like Julia Reichert and Jim Klein, became an award-winning documentary filmmaker. Carol Pearson, earlier known by her married name of Atkins, who after years in public radio was president of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, which was founded by Nan Rubin. Ellen O'Leary, who founded Youth Radio in Oakland. John McChesney and Gary Covino, who both worked at NPR. Mark Miracle, who can still be heard on KPFA, and so many others, especially women, who went on to long and storied careers in media. Joanne herself worked at KPFA, WGBH in Boston, NPR, where she brought Car Talk to the national airwaves, and KQED in San Francisco, retiring after 28 years as station manager. Also exploding were social movements, like Black nationalism and the anti-war movement, spurred by student activism radicalized by assassinations, the campus shootings at Kent State and Jackson State, the draft. Second wave feminism was on the rise, and it too influenced much of what was heard on the station, like this International Women's Day celebration held on Antioch's campus.
We're going to have some more songs in a minute, but we have some speakers. I think we should get to it. But before we hear from the speakers, I think we should talk briefly about the history of International Women's Day and women's role in American labor history. It's something that we always hear so little about. International Women's Day grew specifically out of a demonstration in 1908 of female garment workers in New York City. But it grew really out of a long history of women's involvement in labor struggles, not just for better working conditions, higher wages, and job security for themselves, their husbands, and their children, but to protest the injustices of American class society. The earliest known strike of women factory workers took place in 1824 in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and was followed shortly thereafter by other strikes in New England mill towns. All through the 1830s and 40s, women continued to press for shorter working days with no wage cuts. Male and female workers fought together often as in 1848,
You know, one other thing to tell you about the history of that period that we were in, which was that the women's movement and those of us who were my age at the time, when I came to Yellow Springs, I was 28, and the women's movement was beginning, and some of us began to think about our lives not being what we had imagined when we were teenagers, that is, homemakers and mothers and, you know, community members, but not necessarily working women. We began to think of other possibilities as we were joining the women's movement and joining marches and, you know, other kinds of celebrations and protests and so on. And that was very much part of the environment that WISO in those years was part of. And so it wasn't surprising that there were a lot of women on the air.
I've talked with several of the women around Antioch who are involved in the women's movement, and very few of them have been aware of the type of repressive legislation that's being passed at this time. Things like House Bill 980 and House Bill 1221.
Heather Turry was a student programmer back when Joanne was station manager. Here's how she remembers it.
So I started working at the radio station in early 1975, I think, and I was really young. I think I was just turning 22, and so I didn't, like a lot of people that age, at least then, I didn't ask about the past. I didn't think about the past. I didn't even know what year the radio station started operating. I learned that decades later. And I didn't know that it had been the province of men, pretty much just guys. Didn't know that. Because by the time I got there, people who were on-air programmers and people doing all kinds of stuff at WISO, I couldn't say it was half and half, but there were lots of women. So that's what I saw. So I thought that's just how it is, right?
She remembers the influence of the college's Women's Center. That's W-O-M-Y-N. Emblazoned on the door in red paint was a raised fist inside the Mirror of Venus, recognized even today as the symbol for radical feminism. The center was just steps down the hall from WYSO on the second floor of the Antioch Student Union.
That wasn't a place where women just came to hang out and just, you know, giggle and have fun with each other or something. It was utterly political, and there was a lot of very intensely radical thought that imbued all the conversations there. It was a real powerhouse scene there. And the college, I don't think you were likely, if you walked around, at that point there were usually about 900 students on campus. It was a moment in time when the college had a large enrollment, one of the largest it probably ever had. So let's say roughly half of the 900 were women. I don't know if that's true, but I'm sure it was roughly half. And I don't think you could have met a single woman on that campus at that time, woman, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, who was not a feminist. I think you'd be hard pressed to find her at that time.
You know, Jocelyn, I feel like Heather's experience is the sort of picture of Antioch College and WISO that is commonly held today. But when you think about Charlotte Drake and Heather Turry, they were so close chronologically, and yet what they experienced as women on campus and at this radio station were just so radically different.
You know, there was a catchphrase back in the day. It was actually an advertisement for a cigarette. You've come a long way, baby. You know, I think that transition from the 50s to the late 60s, early 70s, there was so much change that happened in that short amount of time. You know, it's a completely different experience for Charlotte than for Heather, a completely different scene, one we really take for granted now. So another student programmer was Molly Mettler. She's retired now, out in Boise, Idaho. Back then, she loved playing Ella Fitzgerald on her show, Saturday Uprising. The year before graduating, she had co-opted at KRAB, a progressive, listener-supported station in Seattle. She knew what community radio was like outside the WYSO bubble.
Looking back on it, WISO was very well organized for a college radio station. There was a good cohesion among the staff and a good sense of who we were and what we were about.
And what WYSO was about wasn't just leftist politics and women's lib. It was about sharing human connection over the airwaves.
Have you ever felt a gentle touch?
Do you have
an absolutely favorite memory that sort of encapsulates the whole experience for you?
There was a sweet time. This was in my last year of school. I remember walking to the studio on a Saturday morning. It was very quiet and it was snowing. And I went to the student union building. And I was all alone in the building. I was all alone at the radio station, and snow was falling outside. And there was just this blanket of quiet. And I don't remember what I played that day, but I think the music must have enhanced that feeling of just peace and serenity and encapsulation, just being a sort of single point of sound in a great big world. Yeah, I just like that.
Heather Turry's experience also transcended gender and politics.
And maybe one of the most fun things for me was engineering the Sunday Night Live music show from Kelly Hall, which Randy Tom started, and he named it Live Music Crawling Out Your Radio. And somehow I ended up taking it over. I don't remember why. And that was really fun. It was like I got to go to all these concerts, really. And I got to record them and broadcast them. And it wasn't a tremendous amount of hard work because we didn't have anything fancy to make it a lot of work. We just had simple stuff. And I was taught to set the levels and leave it alone. So, you know, it was that rule, set it and forget it. Don't keep twiddling with it. So I could just set it to the best of my ability, kick back and enjoy the show every Sunday night.
Heather engineered this concert by the English Trio, three local women playing a classical repertoire in Antioch's Kelly Hall Auditorium, where many lectures and concerts and events took place and were recorded by WYSO. It's Ava English on piano, Mary Schumacher violin, and Shirley Mullins on cello. As local music teachers, they were responsible for the musical educations of scores of Yellow Springs kids, me included. Mary and Shirley founded the Yellow Springs Youth Orchestra, a program that nurtures young musicians in the village to this day. Performing so often took a back seat to the traditional women's roles expected of them. They were mothers, wives, teachers, but this tape is a precious testament to their creative lives outside the socially prescribed roles. Listening to this, Juliet, I didn't realize the caliber of their musicianship. I remember them, I was a kid mostly, but in listening to this tape, I can hear just the nuance and the subtlety and the passion with which they were playing. And it's so moving. It, you know, it makes me wonder what they might have missed out on because of those prescribed roles and the rampant sexism in classical music.
I think it's both a testament to what this archival audio can bring to life and to the caliber of musicianship that we have here in Southwest Ohio and the general WYSO listening area. We're obviously going to be hearing a lot more of that throughout this series.
We are. And I think it's just wonderful and amazing that it's in so many different genres, classical music just being one of them. This is beautiful, beautiful music.
And it made me happy because, again, with my sense of community, I just kept thinking, well, this is going out there. And we have a lot of watts. So it's not just like a bunch of students on campus are listening to this. People in a lot of counties around here are listening to this if they like whatever kind of music we've got going on tonight.
It was a rich time, as Molly Mettler recalls.
My time at WYSO was very, you know, very limited to 74, 75, those 2 years. But when I think back to the people who I encountered there, like Randy Tom and Joanne Wallace, Andy Garrison, others who have gone on to really create excellent, not only radio, but excellent media for us. I just feel like it was a good, yeasty time, almost not a golden age so much as an age that was just filled with potential and possibility. You know, everything was so scrappy at WISO during that time. Everything was bootstrapped and scrappy and pasted together, and everybody was trying to create really good radio. And I think we managed to do it.
And women's voices, women's issues, and women's music were becoming defining aspects of WYSO's sound, of creating really good radio. And reading through the program guides, we have the shows from music to documentaries to account for it.
Shows like Bedrock, Midnight Creep, Through the Listening Glass, She Comes in Colors, which was Nan Rubin's program that featured, quote, music by women, for women, about women, and around women. Mother Jones Memorial Hour, and of course, Women in Music, which went on the air in 1975 and continued for over two decades. We'll devote a whole episode to honoring and celebrating it, so keep listening.
But gender wasn't the only intersectional category of experience in play. Sexuality, race, and especially class played huge critical roles in WYSO's programming. Of course it did, considering the ideological approach of many of the station's staff. Class was especially evident in the communities of Appalachian folks who came north to work in Ohio's factories, bringing mountain culture and mountain music with them. Rise When the Rooster Crows, an early morning bluegrass show that still airs today, began in 1972, hosted by musical brothers Jim, Dan, and Tom Duffy.
Tom's just going to play while the other
All right, get my brother Tom's going to play before these professionals come over here and play for us.
Come on, Tom, play a tune.
Here's Joanne Wallace.
That genre of music, old-timey music, fiddle music, bluegrass music, came from our part of Ohio and Kentucky as there was migration of many of them poor families coming north for jobs, especially along I-75, going north through Ohio up to Toledo, and then settling here, Cincinnati, the Dayton area, and so on. The music of old-timey music and bluegrass was very much a part of their culture.
Bluegrass was people's music, and WYSO's People's News was very much about reporting on labor and the workers of the greater Miami Valley community. During the late 60s and early 70s, when strikes occurred at plants like National Cash Register or General Motors, idled workers found something to do with their time.
We were able to recruit a number of those people, especially the Rooster Crows folks, and some of the strikers became WYSO program presenters and volunteers. The radio transmitter went on precisely at 7 o'clock because all of those folks were used to being on time and work schedules and so on. And so suddenly the station was very solid in terms of its morning music. But that's some of the culture that we were able to incorporate into WYSO.
That's how bluegrass and old-time country music became mainstays of programming at WYSO, and that's where we're heading in episode two. We'll dig down into the roots of WYSO's bluegrass legacy and listen to women musicians and the women programmers who played their music on the air. Women like Suzanne Hopkins of the Hot Mud Family, recorded live by WYSO at Chili's Nightclub, singing the plaintive Little Red Rocking Chair.
I ain't got no use for the little red rocking chair.
That's next time on Rediscovered Radio, women's voices, women's music in the WYSO archives.
And who rocked that cradle?
The show was written and produced by me, Jocelyn Robinson, with Juliet Frumholdt. Sound designed by Tom Amrine. Jesse Dukes is the editor. Thanks to Scott Sanders at Antiochiana, and special thanks to Nina Ellis. You can see some photos of the early days of WYSO and hear more audio at WYSO.org. Thank you very much, and good night.